Call to order the House Revenue Committee. Welcome everybody here today for probably a short meeting.
Good.
Yeah, if nobody minds. Yeah, it's okay. We've gone long a couple days this week. Let's begin today with the public hearing on House Bill 2152. I have the overview on the bill. There's at least one amendment coming for us today. My intention is not to work it. We'll take a look at the amendments, have some discussion, then we'll test the temperature of the water and see what folks want to do and probably bring it back up next week for a work session. So with that, let's open the public hearing, House Bill 2152, and welcome Dick Yates.
Chair Shadley, members, Dick Yates, Legislative Revenue. House Bill 2152 extends the sunset on the temporary cigarette tax, which is used to provide funds for the Oregon Health Plan. Tax was originally passed in 1995 and sunset at that time after 2 years. In each legislative session, that sunset has been extended by 2 years. This bill would remove the sunset and essentially make the tax permanent. The Dash 1 amendments that you have also before you keeps the sunset and extends it 2 years to January 1, 2006.
Thank you very much. Dick, just to confirm, this these funds are in the governor's budget, recommended budget. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's bring forward Lynn Reed, Department of Human Services. Good morning, Ms. Reed.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lynn Reed, Administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs within the Department of Human Services. House Bill 2152 does take the 10-cent tobacco tax, which is dedicated to the Oregon Health Plan, and makes it permanent, and it also does support the governor's balanced budget.
Sorry. It was the adjective.
Yes. without passage of this bill, the tax would indeed sunset on January 1, 2004. And I'm here today to ask for your support for this bill. The 10-cent tax represents 100% of funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program. And it also provides funding for additional components of the Oregon Health Plan. Were this the tax not continued, it would sunset 6 months into the next biennium and would leave the governor's balanced budget short $30.7 million in state funds. It would be necessary for us then to reduce spending in order to live within the available revenue. And the programs that have been identified for elimination, should that funding not be available, are the Children's Health Insurance Program, which is projected to serve 24,000 children, uninsured children under the age of 19, with incomes up to 185% of the poverty level. Coverage for full-time college students who are eligible for Pell Grants, and there are about 2,500 college students in that category, and would eliminate the poverty-level medical program for pregnant women and their newborns with incomes between 133% and 185% of the poverty level, and there are about 2,600 individuals in that category. Altogether, over 29,000 OHP clients would lose their health care coverage if that revenue is not available. Obviously, that means that children would be losing access to comprehensive preventive services and treatment for illness. Pregnant women would not be able to access or may forego early prenatal care. Their newborns would not have coverage for preventive services such as immunizations and treatment for illness. You should know, however, that although those programs have been identified as the ones that would be eliminated, our current federal waivers that were granted by the federal government to operate the Oregon Health Plan do not allow us to reduce coverage for pregnant women and these children that I've mentioned. So we would need to enter into negotiations with the federal government to see if they would allow us to reconfigure the Oregon Health Plan in order to affect these reductions in program coverage. In summary, continuing this tax will support coverage for the 29,000 individuals I've indicated and is needed to support the governor's balanced budget. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Reed. Questions? Real. Okay, did a good job. Thank you very much. Next we have Courtney Drescher.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Courtney Dresser, and I am the Oregon Advocacy Manager for the American Cancer Society. I'm here today to speak on behalf of all the voluntaries, the American Lung Association, American Heart Association, and the Cancer Society. We would ask for your support and passage of House Bill 2152, which would keep a 10-cent surtax on the per-pack cost of cigarettes and eliminate the sunset provision placed on this particular tax. As you've heard, the 10-cent per-pack surtax was designated to help fund programs in the Oregon Health Plan. This is a steady stream of funding for the health plan. The American Cancer Society continues to hold the position that portions of cigarette taxes should go to health care funding, especially in Oregon, where over 40% of Oregon adult smokers receive health care insurance through the state. The other portion of the bill, which isn't there basically, is the sunset provision. Over and over again, former and current members of the legislature have reissued this tax. It's time to stabilize the source of funding and eliminate the need to do this every 2 years. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. My testimony is short and sweet, as you see, so if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer any.
All right, thank you. Are there questions from Ms. Drescher? All right, thank you. Next, Mark Nelson and Richard Kosasan.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing R.J. Reynolds Tobacco. We have been here before on several occasions on this particular piece of legislation, and I'll try to make it reasonably short. As you know, in 1993, at the very end of the legislative session, in an effort to fund the Oregon Health Plan, the 10-cent cigarette tax was adopted. And it was adopted at that point in time with an agreement that it was bridge financing, that it would, in fact, bridge the gap that was apparent at that point in time in trying to close the legislative session. And as we all know, and we were warned at that particular time, that there was no tax that is ever undone. We, however, have come back every 2 years with a plea to you that that this tax once again be set out for 2 years and with a sunset date. This particular legislation, as it has been introduced in previous sessions, eliminates the sunset date. We ask that it continue. And Mr. Kosan will talk briefly about some numbers that we're beginning to look at as we evaluate whether this tax and the 60-cent tax that was adopted in September really is bringing in the revenue that you anticipated and solving some of the problems that you were trying to solve with those taxes. That is an effort that's just really gotten underway. But we maintain that we would like to, again, continue the agreement that this 10 cents was bridge financing, that it be set out for 2 years, and that we continue to look at the viability of this tax on 20% of Oregonians to, in effect, pay for programs for all Oregonians. So that's my testimony.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Nelson? I heard on the radio this morning, coming into the Capitol, a comment by someone in Portland city government referring to the, I think it's the business tax in Portland for schools, that that's he referred to as bridge financing, and said, we can't see the land on the other side yet. We can't see the other shore, but we need to keep building the bridge. And I think that's sort of where we are with this, I guess, as bridge financing. Some questions were if we just finish the bridge or whether we had another span. Mr. Kosasan, would you tell us what you have this morning?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Richard Kosasan, Brandon Williamson Tobacco. Some will remember, I think, 2 years ago when we looked at this same issue, we provided a letter that was provided by the Department of Revenue. And the Department of Revenue at that time indicated that because of the state tax level in Oregon, we were losing approximately $100 million in legitimate tax revenues that would otherwise flow to the state. Bob Alexander at that time in the letter indicated that the majority of that was due to non-compliance. And that was with a state tax rate at 68 cents a pack or $6.80 a carton. We've now raised it to $12.80 a carton. If one were to take a hard look at some numbers and the trends of those numbers, you would find out, I think, that we are at a point where the state tax, we've hit a point of diminishing returns. And I would encourage the committee to take a hard look at those numbers. If you would go back to the 97-98 fiscal year, you were generating approximately $183 million. And if you would take a look at the tax to date, albeit there are 3 months of a trend in terms of November, December, and January, and extrapolate a trend line from those 3 months, you would generate in the current fiscal year a little over $200 million. So your receipts go up minimally, and the tax went up dramatically. Since 96, with the passage of 44, that was a 30-cent tax in September. There was a 60-cent tax. Your tax rate effectively has gone up over 200%. Your receipts do not reflect that. I think you have an issue there to take a hard look at, and I would encourage the committee to do so.
All right. Question for Mr. Kosasan.
Mr. Chair, I might just add some of Richard's, again, preliminary numbers show, for example, the 60-cent tax increase. That's an 88% increase. Right now, just looking at those 3 months and setting aside the four tax, you're getting about 20% increase. Again, it's just 3 months, and we're just beginning to look at that data, but I think it points to a major, major problem that we're having in this state that we talked about back in September and all through the special sessions, and that's compliance. Gray market, black market, internet sales, cross-border sales have just exploded. When you get that kind of difference between our tax rate and the neighboring states, particularly Nevada and Idaho.
Anything else? Dick, have you looked at any of those numbers yet?
I have 1 month. That's all, really. December is the only month that is in. The variation that normally occurs month to month is not sort of hide, in a sense, any attempt to try it. Analyze the effect of the tax increase in November.
Okay. All right. So the Dash 1 amendments were drafted at your request to extend the sunset for 2 years. So we have that. We're not in work session, of course, so we won't be going. But we have that. We have the bill which eliminates the sunset. All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else wish to be heard on House Bill 2152? Lee?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lee Hazelwood, a long time, and I guess if you can look on me, a long time senior advocate. But I'd like to go back in history a little bit on this 10 cents. In 1993, I was chair of the Governor's Commission. The Governor's Commission, among other things, has a health care committee. We looked at all health care bills across the United States and also in Oregon. And following the 10-cent increase that was being talked about, the Governor's Commission had a meeting and recommended 25 cents on cigarettes in 1993. I brought a copy of that paper across the... A meeting was then being held by Governor Roberts, and I'm sure in this room are some people who were in that meeting, and I was surprised to hear a governor using some language that said this is going to pass or else. And so in those negotiations, the Governor's Commission did not relent on the 25 cents. That paper went around this Capitol, and suddenly things started to stir. I know Governor Kitzhaber, former Governor Kitzhaber, is called the father of the Oregon Health Plan. The mechanics and the numbers come from Governor Roberts. So due to those many meetings, the 25 cents became 10 cents. And then there was a debate about the sunset. And I know, Mr. Chair, that you've been through many of these sunset clauses on this bill. In my personal opinion, if we'd originally gone to 25 cents, we possibly wouldn't have had a lot of these other measures that went to the people to vote on. I'm not positive about that, but my opinion was the 25 cents was the way to go at that time. So now, once again, I think it's time to remove the sunset clause and get on to other things that you're trying to work on. And I thank you, and I'm open to any questions.
All right. Thank you, Lee. Are there any questions for Mr. Hazelwood? Okay.
Thank you
very much. We've had some later. Maura Roach.
Maura Roach, representing the Tobacco Free Coalition of Oregon. I just wanted to clarify a few things for the record related to the tobacco tax in Oregon. One is that the tobacco tax in Oregon is, in fact, post Measure 20 in September, which was overwhelmingly supported by Oregon voters, now in alignment with neighboring states of Washington and California. And so I think that while we do anticipate that for a period of time people may make an extra effort to obtain cigarettes from states with a lower tax, that will stabilize as the tax is in place over time, and that people won't continue to seek purchasing cross-border from Idaho or other states that have lower tax, although our biggest neighbors to the north and south do not. In addition to that, there was a study done, and I apologize to the committee for not having the site with me, but I will certainly supply it to you. I think it came out in around July of last year, estimating that in order for cigarette taxes to pay to reimburse states for the amount of tobacco-related services that are provided, either public health care costs or associated costs, a tax on each pack of cigarettes would need to be about $5. Smoking is a devastating cost to the state of Oregon in terms of health care, lost work productivity, all sorts of aspects of services that we provide in this state, and we are nowhere near collecting enough tax on cigarettes to pay what it costs the state of Oregon. In addition to that, almost one-third of everyone in a long-term health care facility in Oregon has a tobacco-related illness. And I think this surtax in particular is appropriate being dedicated to the Oregon Health Plan, because 42% of all people on the Oregon Health Plan smoke and will probably be experiencing a tobacco-related illness associated with that. So for the record, the Tobacco Free Coalition of Oregon supports this surtax. We hope you end the sunset, and we think it's appropriate health policy for the state of Oregon.
Thank you, Mara. Any questions? Quiet committee today. Bruce Bishop and Scott Gallen. Is that because of a sense of inevitability?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems in support of House Bill 2152. We would urge the committee's approval of this measure without the Dash 1 amendments, eliminating the sunset and making the tax permanent. You've heard testimony this morning that it may be okay to drive off the end of the bridge. We think that would not be appropriate. This measure will help at least level out, even if we don't know for sure where we're going, and we would urge your support of the extension of the 10-cent cigarette tax.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. Scott?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I represent the Oregon Medical Association. I'm hoping that testifying today doesn't mean I have to drive off of a bridge. We have supported this tax since its inception when it was originally introduced and have consistently testified in favor of continuing the tax, eliminating the sunset as well. It does go for an appropriate purpose, the Oregon Health Plan. And that policy should continue, particularly in a time when revenue is very tight. The health plan is in some serious trouble, and we believe it's the right policy to take for health reasons as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Bishop or Mr. Gallant?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I just want to know that I'll be leading a delegation later today at the St. John's where we'll throw ourselves out the bridge.
That's a different kind of off-the-bridge experience.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to bring the bungee cord.
At your service. Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else? While we're talking about this. Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb, not on a bridge, but on a limb here, and suggest that this 10-cent surtax will continue into the next biennium. The only question then is really with or without a sunset, and we will have some discussion about that. I'm going to close the public hearing in a minute. We'll bring this back up to the work session next week, give us time to cogitate on what we've heard this morning. But before I do, and again, this is not an issue of weather, but more a question of how much. Dick, we have three numbers in front of us on our desk that are tied to this 10 cents. Ms. Reed's testimony reflects the governor's number that's attached to this of $30.7 million. I'll go from top to bottom. Legislative fiscal, the statement we have on our desk shows a number of $24.16 million, and I assume you did the revenue. And that shows 22. Yeah. Okay. Do you want to tell us about those? Which one are we picking here?
Well,
okay. Well, can we have the governor's?
It's better.
Yeah. Is this all about challenges in projecting tobacco tax revenue, or what is this?
I think that is the difference between the 24 and the 22. I'm not. I'll check into it, but I have no idea where the 30.7 number comes from.
Ms. Reed, you said that's in the governor's budget. So, do you know any more than that? Come on up if you have the answer. If not, you can just sit back and shake your head.
Lim Reed. The fiscal analysis that I have done by the department indicates that our 30.7 was derived from the Department of Revenue's December 2002 tobacco tax revenue forecast in order to determine volume of cigarettes estimated to be sold during the 2003-05 and 2005-07 biennia. And then the 10-cent tax was calculated off of that volume.
Okay. Well, Dick, maybe back now next week if you could take a look at all the original sources, so at least we know we'll have a better sense than a $10 million swing.
The problem I've had in the past with the exact in terms of Mooney's estimates is the lag that's involved.
Yep.
And how many months of additional revenue you're going to actually get. It looks like the tax starts on January 1, and it does, but the revenues don't begin to come in until, I mean, that in January you get the revenues from the December tax. And so it's the question of whether you're getting 18 months or 17 months.
Well, we're talking about it over 2 years.
Okay, if we can just, so when we see this back up again, have a, maybe a, at least a narrower range of what the revenue is. Just so we know. Okay, before I close the hearing, one last time. Anybody else wish to be heard on this today? Otherwise, we'll bring this back up next week for work session. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2152, and thank you everybody for their time and attention. Next we have on the agenda a public hearing on House Bill 2764. Is anybody here on 2764? We still haven't seen Representative Patridge. Well, I tell you, who's staff? Elizabeth? Okay, you're here. We'll open it for a public hearing just while we're here, and then we'll obviously that's all we're going to do. Let me open a public hearing on House Bill 2764. Elizabeth?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin-Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. So with House Bill 2764, this is dealing with our credit that has been sunsetted, and it's going to bring it back. So what this credit is a child development program or student parent program credit. It was enacted in 1991. This credit was designed to encourage Oregonians to make contributions to child development or student parent programs as well as school districts. This income tax credit could be taken against personal or corporate income taxes. It was equivalent to 50% of the amount of contributions made to a school district's child development or student parent program that had been approved by the Department of Education. The credit was then also, the Department of Education was limited in the number of schools they could actually approve. They were only allowed to approve 20 child development programs and 20 student parent programs throughout the state in a given year. In 2001-03, there was a sunset put on this credit of December 31st, 2001. And in the 2001-03 tax expenditure report, that's when the legislature was to deal with this credit. The governor had recommended at that time to allow this credit to sunset, and the last tax year in which this credit could be claimed was 2001. Now, what this bill before you is doing is deleting then that sunset of December 31st, 2001 on this child development program and student parent program credit. It clarifies that a taxpayer may amend a 2002 income tax return to claim this credit. And then it alters the limitation on the credit from not exceeding $5,000 for each of these program locations, like each school district, to a credit that's not exceeding $5,000 per contribution to all the program locations throughout the state. The credit limitation change begins tax year 2004. It takes effect 90 days after the end of the legislative session. Now, overall, this credit was not a very big credit at all during the 10 years in which it was in place. The general fund reduction from this child development program or student parent program credit has been less than $50,000 per biennium when it was in effect. So the revenue impact would be pretty minimal at less than $25,000 in the 2003-05 biennium and less than $50,000 reduction in the 05-07 biennium. So that's it.
Okay. Once again, before I close the public hearing, anybody else wish to testify on this? Anybody wish to testify on this bill? Paul, want to come on? All right. Well, we'll let Representative Patridge know that he missed his party, and I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2152. Thank you, Elizabeth. Paul, if you want to come on up, we had a little conversation yesterday in the context of the Treasurer's presentation, and this has come up a couple of times before about where we stand relative to other states with regard to the impact of the current economic recession on state budgets and revenue. And Paul had an interesting graph here this morning that I just asked him, as long as we had some extra time this morning, to share with us for informational purposes only. Thank you. This is obviously a narrow comparison. It's just Oregon and Washington, but it's I thought it was impressive to see, and asked Paul to print these up and share them with us this morning.
Mr. Chair, we've had a lot of discussions about kind of the size of gaps and so forth in the different states, but one of the interesting comparisons is with Washington for several reasons. I think one is that the Washington and Oregon economies have been among the hardest hit by this recession. We've consistently been right next to each other in the unemployment rankings. Washington a little less on the high tech, but certainly the Boeing layoffs have hurt them significantly. And so the two economies have performed pretty similarly in the recession, and also were both pretty strong in the 1990s throughout the decade. But the key difference, of course, in the two systems is one is sales tax, consumption tax dominated, and the other is income tax dominated. And remember the charts we had looking at dependence on a single tax. Oregon was number one on the personal income, and Washington was number two from the retail sales and business and occupation. So what I've done here is look at the last, the one chart looks at the last of four fiscal years. That's the one that says percent change by fiscal year. And Oregon's in green. I apologize for swapping them in the two charts.
Yeah. You're right.
I'll have to correct that for consistency purposes. But Oregon's in green and this one, Washington, in blue. And
it's Oregon is the more dramatic one.
Yes, that's right. And you can see Oregon's very strong performance. These are fiscal years, so kind of the tail end of the boom there in 99-2000, and then 2000-2001. And then the drop in 01-02. I have pulled out the effect of the kicker in pensions. Oregon's personal income tax and corporate income taxes were actually down about 21% in fiscal 02. So when you adjust for the kicker, it's down about 13%. You can see Washington grew more slowly going into 2002, and then the decline in retail sales taxes and business and occupation taxes, which is the vast bulk of their revenue, is about 1.7% for the 01-02 fiscal year. The other chart I have gives you a little longer-term perspective. It takes general fund revenue. Their general fund is a little over $20 billion per biennium. And you can see that going back to the 90s, Washington here is in green, and Washington's economy performed pretty well with generating their consumption tax base growth about 10% or so per biennium. And, of course, you can see Oregon's booming over 20% in 93, 95, 95, 97. So, again, the elasticity of the income tax shows up. And then in 01, 03, our latest forecast, kicker adjusted, is down about 9%. Their latest forecast is down about 0.7% on a biennium to a biennium basis. So clearly they've been hit by the recession, and their revenue stream has dropped growth rate of about 8% down to about a negative 1, about a 9% swing, which is pretty typical of recessions, but not nearly the magnitude we've had on a percentage basis.
Thank you. Any reflections, comments on this? How do you happen to be doing this? Are we not giving you enough?
I was bored, Mr. Chair.
Off the internet,
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Well, I think this just says that it picks up on the comments that Representative Williams made yesterday, in that if you just look at volatility, forget about regressiveness, that side of the argument for right now, a sales tax or consumption-based tax is just simply not as volatile as an income tax.
Although it's interesting, of sales tax states, Washington doesn't have a great sales tax. It's got a narrow base, doesn't it?
Well, Washington does have a fairly high proportion of business purchases taxed, and that really is a key factor in the stability of a sales tax. One is the food base.
Right.
and they don't have food. And many southern states do have food in their base, and that really gives a lot of stability. But also the percentage of business purchases that are taxed, because, you know, we think of it as a retail sales tax, but really business-to-business purchases make up about 20% of the Washington base. So, and that's where you do tend to get some volatility, because, you know, that's, you're really taxing business, and sometimes, in some cases, business capital spending.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'm almost afraid to ask, but any idea how we would look compared to California? Because we know California is having some huge problems. It's hard to compare us with California just because the scale is so different.
Well, Mr. Chair, California is highly dependent on the income tax. They do have a sales tax, but they have an income tax that has even a higher rate than we do.
And they tax capital gains, don't they?
And they tax capital gains, and they have a high rate at the high end. So there's, and I forget what the cutoff is, but they do have a high marginal rate, and that, of course, is where we've really seen the drop off in revenue. Mm-hmm. And they are far more dependent on capital gains than we are. It's been an important part of compensation, you know, in the Bay Area, for example, with the internet boom. So they've been hit more on a percentage basis, would be my guess. And they did, of course, experience the boom in the late 90s. They were a little bit later getting into a boom phase than we were, but their revenue exploded in the late 90s.
And to what extent, you know, have you looked at the impact of their energy problems down there as a contributor to their... I mean, they've got some factors there that we don't have and other states don't have. Are those still strong contributors to their economic problems in California?
I think the energy problems are still a significant factor in terms of their perceived long-term stability. I think it's a negative for them in terms of investment going forward. They did come out of their early 90s period in which they were they were right at the bottom of the employment statistics throughout the early 90s. And then Southern California in particular was able to rebound by the mid to late 90s, and that base is still in place. And now what you see is Southern California doing getting through the recession relatively well. They've got defense establishment. They've established a growing apparel industry. It's really Northern California that's more like the Northwest.
And they've got the Lakers.
Even though they lost.
All right. I just thought this was good information. I'm sorry, Representative Scott.
Actually, I think it is good information, but I also think that it can be interpreted in a couple different fashions. I think that if we're not in a recession as we happen to be at the or have experienced, the obvious growth does not occur, and it's a more stable. But you know, you have to be careful what you wish for whenever you have those in-kind levels. The second part to it is
lower growth over time.
Precisely.
Yeah.
The second part to it is you know, it's very dependent upon what you allow taxes to be charged on, and so you have to be careful what you do that. And the third part is, I think California is a good example because it does have income tax. They have diversified their economy that allows them to come out of it much quicker if they ever went into it in comparison to what we do. So, you know, I don't want to interpret that a sales tax approach is the only approach. There are other things that we should strongly consider whenever we make that determination as to whether that's appropriate to go into or not. Because I think these charts can be interpreted in a much different way that looks pretty rosy for what Oregon has done in the past in comparison. So I think there is other sides to that we should consider also.
I think it's clear that if Oregon had been putting aside money during those growth spurts of the 93, 95 to 95, 97 in particular, you can bet that the impact of this recession would have been mitigated. Having been in the building, having arrived in 97, I can tell you that even among those groups who are critical of the legislature for not having put that money aside, I don't recall any of them at the end of the session saying, thanks, we've had enough, why don't you put the rest of the money in the bank? So the demand is there whenever the money is there. That's the reality. It makes it difficult. But absolutely true that if there had been that factor of putting some of that money away during those what now appear to be the 7 years of plenty, we'd be drawing on our storehouses and have a lot better situation than we are today. Representative Bernhardt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, what your last comment is absolutely right on, and I think it fits in very well with Representative Scott's analysis that if we had managed to keep the reserve as reserves the funds that we returned to taxpayers, we'd be in better shape now. I think the other side of this, and the one that we have to acknowledge, is that as a result of Measure 5, the state budget has been under stress ever since it fully phased in the early 90s. But with the structural deficit as a result of the property tax reduction in the billions of dollars, the equalization of school funding never really succeeded in establishing a level of school funding necessary to carry schools for the long term. And the result of that is that whenever there is more money in the budget, we spend it all. Not because we're profligate, but because we've never actually had a budget to meet the necessary expenditures for built-in expenses since Measure 5 passed. I know that analysis is a little different, perhaps, than others might be, but I think that's another way, frankly, too, of interpreting our expenditure numbers, not that the legislature will spend, quote-unquote, whatever you give them, but that whatever we've gotten hasn't been enough to pay the built-in expenses that the state has since Measure 5.
All right, Representative Williams.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I missed part of this conversation because I'm sure I would have found it enlightening. Just to throw in, I don't know if the committee has had a chance yet to review both the statements from Moody's and Fitch, but about why they downgraded Oregon. But their structural discussion about us, the construction of the way our kicker operates, the transfer of the responsibility for much of those education requirements by the initiative process, and the fact, and both of them comment on the fact, that we are sort of a one-trick pony when it comes to revenue, which means, you know, we can write it up in the good times and write it down in the bad times, but the constitutionalization of the kicker, I think, played a fairly substantial factor in both of their decisions to downgrade Oregon, because even with an economic turnaround, there is a reasonable chance if our forecasters don't, you know, hit it right on the money, we're not going to be being able to use any kind of turnaround surplus to make up the difference in the impact of the downturn. And so I think all those factors play a fairly substantial role. And obviously they give us credit for the new school stability fund, but point out that we have now exhausted it. And there will be a time before that actually produces any kind of additional stability in the system. So I think, in my opinion, those reports, again, just add a voice to the discussion that we ought to be having about the overall structure of our system, recognizing that it's not going to solve any of our immediate problems, but that we ought to think long term.
Okay. I want to thank everybody for indulging me in this discussion. I hope it was enjoyable. Now you all know what we talk about in the House Lounge over lunch. It's just like this. Okay, with that, we are adjourned. Paul, what do we have tomorrow morning?
We have a discussion on transportation policy.
Right,
ODOT will be here to talk about the issues.
And Dick Gates will be back with some logarithms and tables. All right.
And other perturbations.
Yeah. Okay, we're adjourned.